Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Our news, weekday afternoons from 1 to 3. The time is 11 o'clock. It's 36 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. It's all supposed to be over after the decisive New Hampshire primary, but it keeps going on. Mitt Romney pulled a Sally Field saying, "You like me, you really like me," and the Republicans went, "No, but we're willing to settle." Newt became a raging communist, and John Huntsman said his third-place finish was a, quote, ticket to ride, when really it was more hello, goodbye. We'll review all the results, plus Carl Castle tells us why he never, ever eats Go-Gurt.
It's a plastic bag of poison.
We'll ask what's really so bad for you. The answer is not our quiz. We will prove it right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. The death toll from Friday's luxury liner collision with the rocky reef off the coast of Tuscany rose to 5 today, with the discovery of the bodies of two elderly people in the submerged portion of the ship. NPR's Sylvia Pagioli reports there are still 15 people unaccounted for, 9 passengers and 6 crew members.
Divers found the bodies still wearing their life vests. Rescue workers were inspecting the submerged part of the megaship lying on its side just a few hundred meters from the Tuscan island of Giglio. Late last night, a Korean couple on its honeymoon were rescued 24 hours after the collision. And today, a cabin steward, whose leg was broken, was pulled alive from the wreckage. Ship's captain Francisco Schettino spent the night in jail because investigators fear he could escape. He's suspected of manslaughter and shipwreck. Prosecutor Francisco Viruzio confirmed media reports the captain had abandoned ship before all passengers were safely off. Instead of keeping at least a mile from the shore, the ship was sailing just a few hundred yards from land when it hit the reef. Sylvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
A bomb exploded in central Pakistan today as Shiite Muslims were leaving a mosque. Police officials say that at least 13 people were killed and at least 20 people were wounded in the attack. In Iraq, a new wave of explosions hit the western part of the country. Officials say at least 5 people were killed. NPR's Ghassan Adnan reports that the attacks seem to be an attempted prison break.
Gunmen in Anbar province, 60 miles west of Baghdad, have launched a series of attacks using car bombs, roadside bombs, and suicide bombers. 2 car bombs went off close to a mosque, killing a number of civilians. A suicide bomber blew himself up close to a counter-terrorism office. Then a number of gunmen went inside after clashing with officials. Gunmen took a number of policemen as hostages and demanded the release of some of Al-Qaeda prisoners in return. Security forces cordoned off the place in preparation to free hostages. Attacks came one day after a bloody massacre against Shia pilgrims in southern Iraq. Critics have warned of more violence to come if the current political crisis do not come to an end soon. Ghassan Adnan, NPR News, Baghdad.
Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich is defending his criticism of the frontrunner for the Republican presidential nomination, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. Gingrich took a break from campaigning in South Carolina this morning to appear on NBC's Meet the Press. He says questions regarding Romney should be raised now, not during the general election.
I think the result has been to really dramatically slow down his progress and to have a lot of people raising questions about whether or not Governor Romney really could withstand a campaign this fall and really could stand up to Barack Obama in debates.
Gingrich also appeared this morning on Face the Nation on CBS. He said questions about Romney's leadership of the Bain Capital venture firm are fair game and a source of vulnerability for Romney. This is NPR News from Washington. Ban Ki-moon today demanded that the Syrian president stop killing his own people. The United Nations Secretary General spoke at a conference in Beirut on democracy in the Arab world. He said the old order is crumbling in the Arab world, that the days of one-man rule and family dynasties are coming to an end. The outrage of European Union leaders that 9 of its governments have been downgraded by Standard & Poor's is resurrecting the debate about the role of credit rating agencies in financial markets. Terry Schultz in Brussels says the EU has long blamed the big 3 American agencies for making Europe's debt crisis worse.
Downgrades by Fitch, Moody's, and Standard & Poor's mean struggling governments must pay even more to borrow money, exacerbating their problems. Moody's sow seeds of terror was one newspaper headline last summer when Portugal was cut. After Friday's massive downgrade of 9 Eurozone governments, now only Germany, the EU's biggest economy, maintains both a AAA rating and a positive outlook from S&P. EU Internal Market Commissioner Michel Barnier says he's surprised S&P made this decision in the midst of many EU reforms. A regular critic of the power rating agencies have over markets, Barnier last year proposed creating a European agency to counterbalance, in theory, the three American ones, but he was unable to get sufficient support amongst member states. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
The Russian Space Agency expects one of its probes will fall to Earth sometime today. The unmanned Phobos ground was supposed to go to the Martian moon of Phobos, but failed. Scientists don't know exactly where it will land, perhaps Europe, Southeast Asia, Australia, or South America. They say the danger is minimal, since most of the probe is likely to burn up during reentry. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Intel Corporation in recognition of NPR's ongoing commitment to science and technology coverage.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you guys so much. We do have a great show for you today. We got comedian and actor David Cross. You may know him from Arrested Development. He'll be joining us later to play our game. Now, he has been out on the talk show circuit promoting his latest movie, Alvin and the Chipmunks 3, Chipwrecked. He's been doing it in an unusual way. He's been saying that making that movie was the most miserable experience of his life. It's true. To which we say, so far, David. So far. Promise you nothing but good times, though. Give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Rachel from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina.
Hey, Rachel. Kitty Hawk, famed for the birthplace of flight?
Yeah, the people in Ohio don't like that, but
I know. Whenever I've been to North Carolina, where they have the birthplace of flight, and I've been to Ohio, and it says birthplace of flight.
Mm-hmm. There was a battle over the quarters, too, when they were coming out with the state quarters. Ohio and North Carolina both wanted to claim it.
So. How are you guys going to settle this?
Flip a quarter.
Well, it's great to have you with us, Rachel. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to the interim editor of the San Antonio Express News. It's Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Next, a comedian here in Chicago and a host at Vocalo.org. It's Mr. Brian Babylon.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, how are you? And lastly, a comedian performing January 21st at the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hey, how are you?
Rachel, welcome to the show. You'll start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle right there is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, of course, explain or identify that 2 times out of 3. Do that, you'll win Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
I am.
All right. Now, your first quote is a man reading from his list of likes on his Match.com profile.
I like being able to fire people.
Well, that man was definitely liked by the people of New Hampshire. Who is it?
That was Mitt Romney.
It was Mitt Romney, yes. Now, he said that the day before the primary. Governor Romney's opponents had a field day with it. Now, to be fair, though, it was taken out of context. He wasn't talking about how much he enjoys firing people. He was talking about how much he enjoys setting people on fire.
Why did he say that?
He said that actually in the context of talking about in health insurance.
Yes.
He was talking about how lovely it would be if all of us were in a position to be able to pick from among health insurance companies and fire them if they chose not to service us in the way that we chose.
But see, the problem with that is that, yes, he was misunderstood, but the misunderstanding made more sense than what he actually said.
But what, seriously, I want to know, I just found out his name is not really Mitt.
That's not his first name.
That's not his first name. He's going by a nickname? You can run for president with nicknames now?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Whatever. So his real name is Willard.
Willard. His real first name is Willard, though he goes by his middle name, which is Mitt.
Or he can go by Mitt Diddy.
Mitt Diddy.
Yeah. The new nickname.
That would be kind of great.
Yeah.
I guess I never thought about what his real name was.
Some people thought it was short for Milton or...
So actually, it turns out that about 2% of the American public thought it was short for Mittens.
Mittens, yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
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 Now, see, that would be very sweet. I might vote for him.
There you go.
President Mittens?
Yeah.
You just instantly think of a kitten president. Like,
a kitten president?
A kitten president could get anything passed
today,
through Senate and Congress. I guarantee you.
The President's Day began with the president playing with a laser pointer.
Mm-hmm.
This is true. This is a true story. The New York Times talked to a woman in New Hampshire who said she decided to vote for Romney at the last minute because, unlike the other Republicans, he supports abortion rights. Told that he now opposes them, she said, quote, "He does?"
That's going to be his new slogan.
He does?
He does?
Mitt Romney, he does? Rachel, here is your next quote. It's about a certain beloved snack.
It's a plastic bag of poison.
That was Morning Joe host Mika Brzezinski. She was talking about one particular American treat that might soon become unavailable. What?
The Twinkie.
The Twinkie, yes. Here is an economic indicator to finally really scare you. The Hostess, the company that makes Twinkies, is going bankrupt.
I want my country back.
I know. A company that profits from making people fat cannot stay solvent in America.
Do you remember the pure pleasure of getting a Hostess cupcake? Because first you would peel off the little squiggle.
Oh, yeah. Which came off in one piece.
Yeah, and then you peel off the frosting.
That's how serial killers start. They start with peeling off. You know what? They're on the news, going crazy, killing people.
That is a psychological profile. Yep. Like, did you torture your snack cakes? That's an early indicator. You know, they might have had another problem. The company lost a lot of money paying those FCC indecency fines every time they ran an ad for products on TV, like Ho-Hos, Ding-Dongs, Snowballs, Chocolate Frosted, you know. Here is your last quote, Rachel.
You're a child of a child from Destiny's Child.
That was somebody celebrating the birth of his child, the brand new song. The baby was born to what celebrity parents?
Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Very well done, Rachel, yes. We all remember, of course, a manger was good enough for Jesus, but how many platinum records did Mary have? That's why Blue Ivy Carter, the child of Jay-Z and Beyonce, was born in a specially renovated private suite in a Manhattan hospital with security guards and three wise men who brought gold, frankincense, and the RZA. Jay-Z released a track celebrating the birth of his daughter. Carl quoted from it. The song is credited to her as an artist, making her, at one day old, the youngest person ever to be in the Billboard Top 10, with the exception, of course, of Justin Bieber. A surprising number of people were posting on Facebook and elsewhere that this baby is in reality the spawn of Satan. Here's the logic. Blue Ivy, strange name. It's actually an acronym. It stands for Born Living Under Evil, Illuminati's Very Youngest.
I think she's lucky she didn't get named Mitt.
Yeah.
I don't know. Great things could have been in store.
Blue Ivy. You got Blue Ivy. You got agriculture problems. Is that what you got? You got Blue Ivy. You're going to get your gardener in there and cut that out. Why don't you just name her Kudzu if you're going to do that?
Anyway, congratulations, Jay-Z. You now have 100 problems.
Carl, how did Rachel do in our quiz?
Rachel was perfect, Peter. Rachel, you had three correct answers, so you win our prize.
Yay. Well done. We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, you can always go to WBEZ.org. And you can also find a link at our very own website, waitwait.npr.org. Panel, of course, right now it is time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, there was a big fight this week about hip-hop slang. Rival gangs were going at each other over the meaning of words. This fight happened where?
I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. It was like, the fight got bitter. It was like, 15 down. You're an idiot.
Crossword puzzles?
Yes, in the New York Times crossword puzzle. That's where the fight happened. Last Saturday's puzzle offered this clue. Listen carefully. Whack in hip-hop. And the answer was illin. Now, this is ridiculous, as all the street smart readers of the Times know, because whack means bad, as in, whoa, the style section was whack this week. And illin means good, as in, oh, I thought Maureen Dowd's column on Michelle Obama was quite illin, n'est pas?
No.
All right, Brian, you're disagreeing?
No, as an expert on the panel, You be illin was a song. You be illin, so that means that you're doing something bad.
Anyway, we can settle this, because to talk about the controversy that followed, we are pleased to welcome our friend Will Shorts. He's the NPR puzzle master and the editor of the New York Times Crossword. Thanks for joining us, MC Shorts.
Hey there, good to be here.
Nice to talk to you again. To prove your authority on this topic, Will Shorts, please use illin in a sentence for us.
You caught me by surprise.
That's hilarious.
The illin comes from the Run DMC song, and the example is that a guy goes into KFC and orders a Big Mac, and that's illin. Clearly, that's bad.
That's bad.
Told you.
Well, all right. So illin. Illin is bad, and whack is also bad.
That's right. So that's why I thought that was a good clue. It turns out this Run DMC song is from 1986, and the word...
Well, I knew that.
The word has changed meaning since then, and nowadays, illin is kind of cool.
So you're getting these complaints from the reader, and did you ever say to yourself, what do you know about hip-hop? You do the crossword puzzle in the New York Times.
Exactly.
Well, since we've established you as an authority... On street vernacular. Will Shorts, have you ever gotten jiggy with it?
All the time.
All the time.
That is whack.
Right. Will Shorts is the puzzle master, of course, for Weekend Edition Sunday. He's also the editor of the New York Times Crossword and a man so dope, he spells Shorts with a Z. Thank you so much, Will.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Coming up, secrets of the Clinton White House. No different secrets. It's our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. And comedian and actor David Cross joins us to play Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at progressive.com. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine. Online at poetryfoundation.org. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Julie Rovner, NPR health policy correspondent. In these days of shrinking budgets, most media organizations are shedding reporters who specialize in one area. But here at NPR, health policy is all I do. Why? Because it affects every person in the most intimate way, as well as the nation's and the world's budgets. That's why NPR devotes the resources and the time to explain it to you. This is NPR.
Coming up on Cue, Gian Gomeshi returns to the host chair this morning, and he'll have a chat with versatile, prolific actor Liam Neeson. Neeson stars in the new action thriller, The Gray. Plus, the Q Sports Culture panel meets again. Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
You can hear Q weeknights at 10 o'clock. Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from WPLN listener members and from the Webb School, where young men and women are guided by core values of honor, integrity, and civility to reach their full and rich promise. Information about their January 16th Visitor's Day at thewebschool.com. It's 20 minutes after 11, 36 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Brian Babylon, and Kerry O'Connor. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. It is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there, Carl Carlson calling from Plainfield, Vermont.
Say your name again.
Carl Carlson.
Carl Carlson.
Correct.
I love it. Carl, welcome to the show. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Carl's topic?
The meaning of is.
Politics seems so nuts these days, so people tend to get nostalgic for the peaceful, quiet days of the Clinton White House. Believe it or not, we did not hear everything strange and scandalous that went down there. Just this week, we heard an explosive news story about the Clinton administration. Each of our panelists will tell you a story about the Clintons. Only one is true. Ready to play?
Certainly.
First, let's hear from Kerry O'Connor.
The maid cleaning the Oval Office was the first to notice the little cannonball was missing. Perched on a wooden stand, it had graced the office since 1932, a gift from the King of England, and it had come from a gun mounted on Sir Francis Drake's storied galleon, the Golden Hind. She searched high and low. Nothing. The Secret Service got involved. Still nothing. The search became frantic when someone noticed an appointment on the calendar with the British ambassador for the following afternoon. Then the president's secretary, Betty Curry, noticed a pile of wet splinters in the middle of the hallway. Wet, slobbery splinters. It was what was left of the ball's wooden stand. And not too far away was the president's chocolate lab, Buddy, looking just a little guilty. Veterinary x-rays confirmed that the ball was nestled peacefully in Buddy's tummy. But it couldn't and wouldn't stay there. A Secret Service agent was deputized to take Buddy on all his bathroom breaks, and, sure enough, the next day, the ball was discharged from Buddy's golden hind, swiftly sanitized, and placed on a new stand where it rests today.
The amazing disappearing and then disgustingly reappearing British cannonball. Your next story of a Clintonian secret that finally came to light comes from Brian Babylon.
It's a tradition for most outgoing presidents and governors to make some last-minute pardons. As most of you remember, President Clinton got some heat after pardoning 140 people on his last day in office, including fugitive businessman Mark Rich, for his 51 counts of tax fraud. But among those 140 people is another convicted entrepreneur that Clinton would love to forget. Lex Luthor, Superman's arch-nemesis and CEO of LexCorp. He had made significant contributions to both Bill's presidential campaign and Hillary's senatorial campaign. No one is really clear on how Mr. Luther's name ended up on the list for consideration, but Clinton was adamant about the pardon after seeing the campaign contributions. So how did this happen? Apparently, prankster tax attorney Jesse Kimbrough had been planning this for years. It only cost me $175,000 in campaign donations, she said, but it was worth it. And it would have gone out, too, if Clinton's friend, Bruce Lindsay, hadn't vetted the pardons at the last minute. In fact, it may be the fact that he was distracted by the Luther pardon that he let the Rich pardon slide through. Superman was unavailable for comment.
President Clinton pardons Lex Luthor, the completely fictional supervillain from the Superman comics. And your last secret of the Bubba comes from Paula Poundstone.
Former President Bill Clinton sure looks lean and statesmanly these days. He's a vegan. He doesn't eat meat. He doesn't eat sugar. He doesn't eat dairy. He doesn't eat white flour. For a snack, sometimes he can gnaw on wicker furniture. Former White House pastry chef Roland Mesnier says it wasn't always that way. He says back in the meat and gluten flour days of the White House, President Clinton had an appetite that could make a chef quiver like a bowl of Jell-O salad. One night, the president ate half of a strawberry cake all by himself, and the next morning came back to finish the job. The remaining half of the cake, however, could not be found. President Bubba became distraught, pounding the table, shouting, "I want my cake!" The shameful incident has remained secret until now and may have inspired the president's vegan conversion. No one, no matter how powerful, pounds the table and shouts, "I want my tofu, honey, wheat-free nut tart!"
All right. Here are your choices. One of these things really happened in the Clinton White House. Was it from Kerry O'Connor, the story of how Buddy the dog made off with a valuable British artifact and then reluctantly gave it back? From Brian Babylon, how Bill Clinton was fooled into pardoning Lex Luthor, Superman's archenemy? Or from Paula Poundstone, how Bill Clinton got really, really, really mad when he did not get his cake? Which of these is a real story from the Clinton White House?
Well, that's tough. But I think maybe B, Lex Luthor, has the ring of truth. Might that be?
You're going to go for Ryan's story that Bill Clinton pardoned Lex Luthor, the Superman villain, not really knowing it was Lex Luthor.
Yes, I'm going to have to go with it.
You're going to go with Brian Babylon's story of Lex Luthor being pardoned. All right. Well, to bring you the real story, we spoke to the journalist who uncovered this scandal.
Pastry chef Mesnier said that he had a face-to-face with Clinton, and Clinton said, "I want my cake that they never do."
That was Washingtonian editor-at-large Carol Ross Joint. She reported the story about Clinton's cake rage. So obviously, as we now know, it was Paula who had the real story. I wish the Lex Luthor story was true, because I would believe it, but sadly it is not. You did not win our prize, but you earned a point for Brian for his excellent story.
Thanks, buddy.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for playing.
Alrighty.
Bye-bye. And now the game in which people who do great things now do something silly. We call it Not My Job. David Cross is one of those guys who shows up everywhere and makes everything he is in funnier. He did it for TV shows like Arrested Development, movies like Kung Fu Panda, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, in his own cult classic TV show, Mr. Show. Now he's got his own series on IFC called The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret. He joins us now. David Cross, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Hello.
Hello,
thank
great
you.
To have you. I neglected to mention, of course, maybe the crown in your oeuvre, which is the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies. You've been out promoting.
Yes, thank you so much for bringing that up.
I did. You're in all now three of the Chipmunks movies. You're in the third one, Alvin and the Chipmunks 3, Chipwrecked.
Yep, because children love puns.
They do. From an early age, I've noticed, even before they can walk, they like wordplay. So you've been out promoting this movie in an unusual way.
Well, I've been promoting the Todd Margaret show, and then people have asked about Chipwrecked, which I had a terrible time on. And so, why did you have a terrible time?
Yeah, what happened?
It was just a lack of respect, and you know, it was the third movie, and those movies made a lot of money, like over $1 billion.
Really?
Yeah.
How much do those chipmunks make?
Well, David, the chipmunks always have been disrespectful. You didn't know that going in?
That's their thing.
They are chipmunks. They're not nice.
They're unruly. They've given David trouble. Did you have none of the albums growing up? Alvin often sang off key, David.
On purpose. I know. It was grating. It was Simon. All right, there.
Simon.
Fine. You want the...
The one with the glasses?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot more going on to him. And I've heard rumors. I'm writing a tell-all book with Kitty Kelly, and it'll be coming out.
You know, it's funny. You always see a blind items in the gossips. It's like, oh, and then there was a chipmunk who's totally into crystal meth. And you're like, what chipmunk is it?
Yeah, it's Simon. We know. It's Simon.
Yeah, it was just it's too long to go into now, but it was just
How's the movie? Tell us, is the movie any good?
It's really good. Do you like Sartre or Camus?
You mean all the great French existentialists? You bet. Who doesn't?
If you like those their writing, then I think you'll like Shipwreck.
It
works on a much deeper level than it appears to. Yeah, you gotta see it.
What did you do in the movie? What were you?
I was this live action person that was just degraded throughout the movie for the entertainment of Fox executives, I think.
It turns out that actually being degraded is sort of your niche. Usually, I mean, I'm thinking both of your character Tobias Funk am I saying that right? Funke, that is, in Arrested Development.
It is Funke, yeah.
It is Funke. He was somewhat. He was kind of hapless, if I can be fair to Tobias.
People have compared that character to the Todd Margaret character, and I think that Tobias is a little more pathetic in that he's deluded.
Yes.
You know, the Todd Margaret guy is struggling and making very poor choices and making things worse for himself, but Tobias Funke is a bit. He's a bit duplicitous in a way.
And it is true that you know the your show is called The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret. That is the most truthful title since Jaws. Because if you watch the show, this guy just constantly makes the wrong decision from the very first episode, and things get worse.
What about the horse whisperer? Because that guy whispered to horses.
That's true.
Pretty truthful.
That's true.
Do you have any idea how old Yeller was?
I'm saying.
Same kind of thing.
But there's like, but you know, with the new show, it's like, oh my gosh, there's a decision coming up. I bet he'll make a poor one. And I bet you can say, you're kind of a spoiler, if you will, that the decision is going to be worse than the last one. You know what I mean?
That is true. And you're just hopefully, once you get past the title, you strap yourself in, you're along for the uncomfortable ride.
Hey, I wanted to talk to you about something that's important to me, which is I just want to praise you for being an out and proud bald American.
Oh, thanks. That was a struggle. That was a big...
Was it really?
It was a struggle to come out. You know, it was just recently... Because up until about a year ago, I just thought my hair was starting to thin.
Right.
And...
as long as I've seen you, from going back to, like, Men in Black, where you appear in Men in Black, I'm like, that guy's bald, and he's totally out with it. He's comfortable with it. He's cool. He's not trying to hide it.
I started losing my hair pretty early, like around... 1920, not 1920, but 19, 20, the ages of 1920.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, he was doing the Charleston and losing his hair at the same time.
Every time he did the Charleston, that's fun. Has it been something you've had to triumph over, being a bald American in the prejudiced entertainment industry?
No, you know, you just get stuck with, it's actually good because people know what I look like, and then when I put on a wig for like Mr. Show, I mean, what do we do, 100 some odd characters on that show, maybe more? You throw a wig on, you look completely different. If somebody with a full head of hair puts a wig on, they don't look that much different. So it's actually a boon.
The things you have done as an actor have been so astoundingly humiliating to the character you're playing. I'm one of the things that I adored from Arrested Development is the whole a never nude thing where we find out, I'm getting some knowing laughter, there's some never nudes in the audience apparently, where we find out that Tobias is a never nude. He can never be nude even in private. He's always wearing his denim shorts. Where in the world did that come from?
I believe, and I might be mistaken, but if memory serves, that is a real condition that Mitch Hurwitz, who wrote Arrested Development, developed it, had heard about from some German guy. Of course a German guy, but,
right.
Yeah. It's a real thing. I believe that that's the case, so, I've given myself a legal out.
Is it ever hard for you to just throw yourself into humiliating yourself for the entertainment of others?
No. In fact, you give me enough tequila and I'll get naked.
Yeah. Well, David Cross, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
Rick Santorum wasn't the only loser Tuesday night.
The New Hampshire primary isn't just the nation's earliest primary election. It's the only one that allows just about anybody to get in and be in the ballot for about $1,000. So in addition to the major candidates who went down to defeat on Tuesday, there were some others. We're going to say goodbye to these other candidates by asking you questions about three of them. Answer two or more right, you win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is David Cross playing for?
David is playing for Alejandro Rubio of San Diego, California.
Absolutely not. Not him.
That guy! I hate that guy! Out of all the people. All right, here's your first question. If you were to go into the voting booth in New Hampshire on Tuesday and you were to peruse the ballot, you might find which of these candidates? One of these was a real candidate. A, Vermin Love Supreme, whose platform calls for building a time machine to go back in time and kill Hitler. B, Nosferatu Feldman, who's running as the sole member of the Fe party. Or C, Huggy Huggy Kitten, who wants to kiss every American on both cheeks.
I'm going with the first guy.
Vermin Love Supreme?
Yes.
You're right. Vermin Love Supreme.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In addition to the time machine idea, Mr. Supreme wanted to give every American a pony. There was a... Next question, there was a Democratic ballot as well. President Obama was on it, and he won handily. But there was another candidate, Bob Ely. Prior to the election, he sent a pamphlet to New Hampshire voters with what important information? Was it A, Susan Stamberg's cranberry relish recipe, uncredited to her? B, quote, 2 dozen good reasons not to vote for me, Bob Ely. Or C, why the aliens want us to stop drinking beer, as explained to their one-time abductee, Bob Ely.
I'm going with the second one.
You're
going
to go with 2 dozen good reasons not to vote for Bob Ely?
Yes.
You're right.
Wow.
Yeah. You're so confident. Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But yes, Bob Ely did, in fact, send to voters 2 dozen reasons not to vote for Bob Ely. He will come up with a lot of new taxes. He's inexperienced. And, quote, beyond that, I won't spend time on many issues that are important to you. Last question. Now I'm nervous, but I got to do it. Barry Betzler of Philadelphia, he's a candidate. He was asked prior to the election who he would pick as a running mate if he won the nomination. He said he did not have a good answer to that. Why? A, because, quote, all the good ones are taken. B, because, quote, this whole vice president thing is news to me. Or C, because, quote, I'm not that into politics.
C.
You're right again.
Wow.
He's good. Carl, how did David Cross do in our quiz?
Oh, perfect score there, Peter. David, you had 3 correct answers, so you win for Alejandro Rubio.
Well
Alejandro!
Done. Well done, sir. The very perceptive David Cross stars in the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret at second season, is now starting an IFC. Watch it. It's cringe laugh inducing. I recommend it. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, David.
In just a minute, Carl talks to his refrigerator, and it talks back in our Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Reputation.com, with tools to monitor and protect the online reputations of doctors, lawyers, and business professionals. Learn more at Reputation.com. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And Pimsleur Language Programs, available in CD and MP3 editions in more than 45 languages. Learn more at Pimsleur.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper. This week, it's perhaps the ultimate and most satisfying DIY. Home-roasted coffee. I mean, who would let a little smoke get in the way of a perfect cup, right? Well, join us for the details. That's this week on The Splendid Table from American Public Media.
Coming up at noon.
We're glad you listen regularly to Talk of the Nation, but please don't let your involvement end there.
We want you to take an active role in shaping each day's program. Call us or send us an email and make your voice heard. Your opinions matter. I'm Neil Conan. Join the conversation next time on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 to 3. Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from University School of Nashville's evening classes for the community, introducing Vanderbilt professor Stephen Tepper on the clash between art and culture, January 26th, details at usneveningclasses.org. And by the WPLN Producers Circle, the generous financial support of Producers Circle members helps fund unique local programming produced by Nashville Public Radio.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Kerry O'Connor, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl tries Facebook's new rhyme line feature in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel time for the game that we call...
Extra, extra, read all about it.
All right, panel, as you can tell by Carl's boyish newsboy cry. He's now going to read each of you three headlines, one of which we actually found in a newspaper in the last couple of weeks. Pick that real one, you'll get a point. Kerry, first one's for you. This was a Christmas story we saw in the Dallas Morning News. Was it...
Drunk Santa droppa his panta.
Or...
Colorblind choir sings Rudolph the Gray-Nosed Reindeer.
Or...
Schoolgirl to Santa, give me Justin Bieber or I'll kill you.
I'm going to go with C.
You going to go Justin Bieber?
Yes.
You're right. She sent the note to Santa. She said that. She listed some other things she wanted, and she ended the note, remember, two of these or you die. Okay, Brian, this one's for you. It's from the Sydney Morning Herald newspaper. Was it?
So-called cargo kangaroos seen with multiple pouches.
Or?
Airline pilot startled by flying shark.
Or?
Shark startled by swimming airplane.
It's the first one.
You think it's the first one? Kangaroos? No, I'm afraid it was an airline pilot startled by flying shark. It was actually a helium-filled inflatable shark, not an actual shark.
You never know, man.
You never know. It could jump up. All right. Paula, last one's for you. It's from South Carolina's Greenville News. It's about a surprising new finding. Was it?
Survey says Americans getting tired of surveys.
Or?
Study proves marijuana is a gateway to fun.
Or?
12 out of 10 men don't understand fractions.
Number three.
Number three. 12 out of 10 men don't understand fractions? Well, you're half right. yeah. No, actually, it was Survey Says Americans Getting Tired of Surveys was the headline.
Yeah.
Shoppers are reportedly being asked to participate in more and more surveys, and they don't like it.
Yeah.
Do you usually get that, like, when you call somebody and you do something, and then at the end, like, can you hang on the phone for a survey?
Right.
Right.
Who's really doing that? Like, yeah, sure, I want to waste more of my life.
All right, panel, time for you to answer some more questions about this week's news. Kerry, what do Ronald Reagan, Abraham Lincoln, Margaret Thatcher, Ho Chi Minh, Charles de Gaulle, Charlie Rose, the dead guy from The Sixth Sense, Moses Braveheart, and Canute the Polar Bear have in common?
I think I'm going to need a hint.
Let me give you a hint. For example, Braveheart's wife, also named Callista.
Well, they can't all be related to Newt Gingrich.
Well, they are in a particular way. Newt Gingrich has something in common with all of them.
Well, he sort of looks like a polar bear.
Actually, I just sort of gave you the answers. I'll give it to you. Newt Gingrich says he has something in common with all of them. Those are all
greatness?
People that Newt Gingrich has compared himself to over the years.
Wow.
Whoa. Do that list one more time. I would be
Yeah, let me hear
I'll I'll go through it. You got your obvious ones. He's comparing himself to great leaders like Ronald Reagan, Abraham Lincoln, Margaret Thatcher, Charles de Gaulle, okay? Moses, Braveheart, that's standard. You can see that.
Yeah.
You know, that explains. All right. Ho Chi Minh, little weird. He says, I'm like him not in ideology, of course, the communist and North Vietnamese leader, but in persistence. He's just like Ho Chi Minh. Charlie Rose, because his ability, he's an idea person. The most interesting one, of course, is the Bruce Willis character from The Sixth Sense.
Because he's really dead?
Well, he said, I'm just like Bruce Willis character in The Sixth Sense because everybody knew that I was dead but me. That was his logic.
Well, what about the polar bear?
The polar bear, he's all soft, warm,
cuddly.
Furry, and cuddly.
White
right.
bear.
Actually, he actually compared himself to the polar bear because they both have similar names, Newt and Canute. Now, that's just a fraction, by the way, of the whole list of the people that Newt has compared himself to. We were curious what other people compare him to. So if you Google, we did this, if you Google Newt Gingrich is like, here's what you get on the first page of results, and these are completely real. Newt Gingrich is like Freddy Krueger. He's like a drunk who thinks he can control his drunkenness. And Newt Gingrich is like the Hamburglar. Kiri, you may remember a woman named Oprah Winfrey. She was once on TV.
Yeah.
Well, she's out there trying to make you a better person, and she says that...
She failed.
Yeah, well, not for lack of trying. She says that to save a failing marriage, the couple in question should pretend what?
That they are little fuzzy, cute bunnies.
It's sort of like you're having a fight, and then it's like, oh, quiet, dear. Lord Grantham's in the next room.
Oh, you have to pretend you're an aristocrat?
Not quite. You have to pretend that they're...
That they're aristocrats in the next room.
Not just an aristocrat, but a British aristocrat. You have to... Her advice, Oprah's advice, to all of you out there...
Did I just hear a ding?
You did. That's right, because Oprah's advice to all of you married people is when you're interacting with each other, pretend there's a British person in the next room. This is her theory. If you imagine a very proper, polite British person, that's how we imagine British people to be, listening in the next room, both of you will behave better. Right?
I don't know any British people that are like these fantasy British people. The ones I know drink mad pints and are soccer hooligans and are nuts.
Yeah. Well, then, of course...
I don't know any cucumber sandwich British people.
Yeah.
I don't know any married people who would let a British person slow them down.
That's also true. Coming up, it's Lightning, Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows that are here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in Salt Lake City, Utah on February 16th. That should be great fun. And check out our podcast, How to Do Everything, this week, How to Make Your Own Twinkies. When Hostess goes out of business, you need to know. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is May Isaac from Briarcliff Manor, New York.
Briarcliff Manor?
Wow.
I know, doesn't that sound great?
It does. It sounds like it's the setting of a PBS, like, British series. Right after Downton Abbey, it's Briarcliff Manor. Well, May, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a big winner. Ready to play?
Sure I am.
Here's your first limerick.
From his cave, the old turtle's confiding. A rare glimpse of my kind I'm providing. They thought I had gone. My whole species moved on. But I'm not extinct. I'm just...
hiding?
Yes! Scientists have long thought that the Floriana tortoise of the Galapagos, it's a subspecies of the Galapagos tortoise, was extinct. But new evidence shows it might just be hiding. Apparently what happened was Charles Darwin heard about this, went to look for it, couldn't find it, decided it was extinct, and that's what we thought. If that's what his scientific method consisted of, it kind of makes you doubt the theory of evolution for once, doesn't it? Did Darwin just determine everything he could not find was extinct?
Oh my God, my daughter's related to him.
Oh, really?
doesn't look for anything.
It's like, where are my keys? Can't find them. Must be extinct.
So yes. There are dodos.
Yes, apparently. They're just hiding.
Yeah.
Here's your next limerick.
Our counselor's simply agog. I've been checking your marriage spat log. There's a lot of rough talk about feedings and walks. The source of your strife is the...
dog?
Right. A survey from the insurance company Esure claims the average family argues 3 times a week over their dog, who should walk it, who should clean up after it, and why it never, ever takes out the trash. Blaming the dog for everything doesn't work, though. It's very unlikely that mysterious pair of underwear you found in the laundry belongs to the dog. All right, here's your last limerick. You're doing very well.
My fridge declares, man, you're a riot. That chicken, I bet you will fry it. Come on and think lean. Eat it baked with some greens. You really should stick to your...
diet.
Yes, diet. The Think Smart Refrigerator, a new gadget, keeps track of your BMI and target weight. It lets you know by telling you when you're eating outside of your prescribed diet. It might suggest you try carrots instead of the cheesecake, or remind you that your skinny jeans are waiting forlorn upstairs. Or in severe cases, it might even say, I can't even tell anymore. Which one of us is the fridge?
I'm never going to be pushed around by an appliance.
Really?
Never say never.
Carl, how did May do in our quiz?
May, you had 3 correct answers. That means you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations, May.
May was great.
Thanks for playing.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now it's time for our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a 2-way tie for first place, Peter. Kerry O'Connor and Brian Babylon, they both have 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2.
All right, Paula, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Just a year into his tenure this week, William Daley resigned his position as blank.
White House Chief of Staff.
Right. In a 23-page legal document, the Justice Department determined this week that blank's recess appointment was legal.
Obama's... yes. Yeah,
the ones that he made. The Iranian government called in the UN to condemn the assassination of a blank in Iran this week.
The nuclear scientist.
Yes, on Wednesday, the Internal Revenue Service announced that this year, people have until April 17th to blank.
File taxes.
Right. A man in Australia thought his car had been stolen, but when police investigated, they realized blank...
It hadn't been stolen.
That the car had rolled down a hill and parked itself in the neighbor's garage.
Oh, wow.
Tropicana is being sued for false advertising for claiming that their pure premium blank is 100% pure and natural.
Orange juice.
Yes. The makers of Skechers sneakers announced that in their Super Bowl ad this year, Kim Kardashian is being replaced by a blank.
By a dirigible.
No, by a French bulldog. A performance of the New York Philharmonic was halted for 3 minutes or more because blank.
Somebody's cell phone was going off.
Yes, indeed. This man's iPhone went off right during the final movement of Gustav Mahler's 9th Symphony, and conductor Alan Gilbert just stopped the orchestra, turned, and stared at him, while other audience members booed. Gilbert said, "You have a phone. Fine, we'll wait." Interestingly, in the original performance of the symphony in 1910, Mahler himself was conducting, and he stopped the show to berate an audience member who would not stop telegraphing. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula has 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Paula has taken the lead.
All right. So, we flipped a coin. Kiri has elected to go second. Here we go. In a statement released on Thursday, the blank said that the recent videotape of Marines won't damage their talks with the U.S.
The Taliban?
Right. Because the search engine will incorporate personal information and results, the FTC may investigate blank for privacy violations.
Google.
Yes. Police in Wisconsin made headlines for arresting a man named blank.
James Bond.
No. Bizao doodoos or bippy bop bop bop. Militant gay rights groups, People of Color, and Vand Jones are among the people that blank is blaming for his recent absence from MSNBC.
Pat Buchanan.
Yes. Republicans expressed outrage after a new book detailed the 2009 Halloween party at the blank that had Johnny Depp and Chewbacca on the guest list.
White House?
Yes. Hockey player Dustin Penner of the Los Angeles Kings injured his back blanking.
It had to do with pancakes.
Yes, he ate a stack of pancakes. Penner has managed to survive countless body checks and vicious hits into the boards, but he was no match for a delicious stack of pancakes at breakfast. He says at future breakfasts he will wear full pads and a pancake helmet. Carl, how did Curie do in our quiz?
Curie had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Curie has taken the lead.
All right. Well done, Curie. How many, then, does Brian need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, Brian. Here we go. Fill in the blank. This week, Iranian authorities sentenced a former American Marine to death because they say he's a blank.
A spy.
Right. Last Sunday, people gathered in Tucson, Arizona to mark the anniversary of the shooting of blank, among others.
Gabby Gifford?
Right. Whole Foods has been forced to recall a product called Rip Roarin' Crab Soup for failing to list blank as an ingredient.
Crabs?
Yes. On Thursday morning, First Lady Michelle Obama opened a new blank account.
Banking?
No, Twitter. Police announced this week that they'd found no new evidence that foul play was involved in the 1981 death of actress blank.
Natalie Wood.
Yes, a Florida defendant in court on drug charges did not do himself any favors when he appeared before the judge wearing blank.
Tutu.
A jacket emblazoned with a recipe for crack cocaine. Sweatshirt featured a step-by-step cartoon recipe for just how to cook crack, but the defendant's lawyer claimed it was just freedom of expression, not a recipe to cook crack. Well, everyone in the courtroom wondered why it couldn't be both. The defendant explained that the crack sweatshirt was a gift from his mother who, you know, saw it and thought of him. Oh, my son likes crack. He'll like that. It's like, that's the problem. It gets around that you're a crack addict and all your presents are crack, you know? Carl, did Brian do well enough to win?
He needed at least 6 correct answers to tie, but Brian had just 4 correct answers. So with 15 points, Curie O'Connor is this week's champion.
Done with an interview. Well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what Hostess will do to save their company. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Esurance, an Allstate company, offering mobile apps and 24/7 help online or over the phone. Learn more at esurance.com. The Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, and Delicious Snack Cake. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Today we say goodbye to our intern, Hannah Withers. We thank her for her hard work, her sense of humor, and her willingness to tackle the news stories too disgusting for the rest of us. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Talarczyk and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, how will Hostess save themselves? Paula Poundstone.
They'll stop current production and shelve the Twinkies they have now for 10 or 12 years until the economy is in full swing again, and then sell them fresh as ever.
Brian Babylon.
They will change their name and hit the urban market by calling them Twinkies with a Z.
Curie O'Connor.
2 words. Twinkie porn.
Oh, God, no.
Well, if Hostess does any of that, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Curie O'Connor, Brian Babylon. Thanks to all of you for listening. My name is Peter Sagal. We will see you next week from Detroit. NPR.
And celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
Tennessee is a state with a growing number of wineries that produce both internationally recognized wines and traditional local wines made from indigenous grapes. There are 36 wineries across the state, and many offer educational tours of their vineyards and facilities. A directory of Tennessee wineries and information on the products and events that each offers is available at picktnproducts.org. Find it on a Tennessee farm.
Support for our programming comes from WPLN listener members and from Lipscomb University's Certificate in Accountancy Program, offering college